Welcome back to More of Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Every month, we sit down with our contributor, Gene Creighton, to discuss new and exciting happenings in the world of astronomy and astrophysics. But this month, we're taking a bit of a look back.
Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium on the UW-Milwaukee campus, and she joins us in the studio now. Hello, Gene. It's lovely to see you.
It's great to be back, Bonnie.
This is a really interesting anniversary. We're talking 40 years. What happened 40 years ago that's astronomically important?
In July of 1976, Viking had what we call a soft landing on Mars.
And that was our first time?
That was the first time for an American spacecraft. The Russians had sent Mars 3 before then. But it had a landing, it took a video for about 20 seconds, and then it went silent. We think that probably one of those infamous dust storms planet-wide developed on Mars, and it basically ruined its electronics. Now, if you see some of the video of the air, of course, the engineers, everybody is totally thrilled. But I don't think they understood at that time truly how magnificent that was, because it was two decades before we were able to do that again.
Yes, I was just thinking when that was, and it was really, it was the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was when Pathfinder landed. So the thing about Mars is that there have been 40 missions to Mars, and that's, you know, the U.S. and the USSR / Russia. There was an orbiter by India. So there are multiple, of course, the European Union. So there have been multiple countries involved, but about half of them did not succeed, either because they missed the target or they blew up on the way while they got there. They were silent, so we assume that there was a major impact. So in some ways, Viking was an incredibly marvelous and magnificent mission. You have to realize that at that point, we knew basically nothing about Mars. We knew very little. We had some pictures that made it look an abandoned, dead place. So when Viking went there, they didn't really know much about the detailed features on the ground. They didn't know what the atmosphere was made of. And of course, they didn't yet know whether there was life on Mars. So they had all these instruments and basically a little lab on board. I mean, these were fairly small, and they didn't move. They weren't like the rovers of today where they could roam around and go to different places. They had two orbiters and two landers. So the Viking project had two orbiters around Mars and two things that landed, the idea being, let's not put all our eggs in one basket. Let's have two landers in two different places to check two different places where life might have been. And they found evidence for dry riverbeds. The material on the ground was this rusty clay, basically, which is why Mars has that reddish color in the sky. And at first, the experiments that they had devised had some hints that maybe there was life. But upon reflection, they realized that all of those chemical reactions could have occurred without necessarily life being present. So in subsequent experiments, subsequent observations, we haven't found any robust evidence for life on Mars. But the whole package was so exciting to see that, you know, Mars seemed at the time to be within our grasp. And as I said, it was 20 years before we were able to land something softly again.
Well, and the other thing that's so exciting about it is when you think about it, 40 years ago, that sort of set the stage for the subsequent missions that have gone on. I imagine that the data that came back from that helped dictate what was going to be looked at in the future.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it also gave us insight about, you know, what's going on Mars, what kind of weather it has. We didn't know that it had, for sure, that it had dust storms at that time, but we got that information too. I mean, sometimes people talk about, when they talk shop, they talk about low-hanging fruit. We didn't know very much about Mars, so all of this was magnificent and big and impressive right away. It also sets the path, as you say, for what other questions can we ask? How else can we explore? And we're still talking today in 2016. We're talking about having people on Mars in the 2035, more or less. So those first lessons have guided us to that dream.
You know, I tend to think of, and I think a lot of us do, we tend to think of things in very quick terms, you know, have it today, have it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And scientific inquiry takes time. Mm-hmm. Every time we have one of these conversations, I'm reminded how long it takes to prove certain things or to discover certain things. We can't just say, oh, we think it's there, so it's going to be there. We have to prove it. And often when we're talking those distances, it takes a long time.
Well, it takes a long time to carefully plan. First of all, well, as you know, these things need time just to get the funding. You need time to get the funding, to get a pre-plan, some kind of basic idea of what you would like to do. And then somebody decides whether, I mean, usually there's money. Usually they do this every 10 years. What are the big projects that we're willing to fund? And if your project is the one that gets funded, then you say, then you're told, okay, you have this much time to put in a full proposal with solve all the details, all the problems, prototypes and everything. And then, you know, you go to the full out mode of constructing the instruments and the spacecraft that you want. And that easily, you can easily be looking at 20 years. I mean, as I said, we're talking now about what we might be doing in 2035. Now, there is a mission that's going to be going to Mars within 2 years or so, as long as it doesn't go back, the launch doesn't go back. But they're talking about sending another rover to Mars in 2018. So Mars has been a long-lasting love affair.
And it doesn't look like we're done with it anytime soon.
Nope. We are.
We like those long-lasting love affairs.
We do.
Well, Jean Creighton, speaking of long-lasting, well, not necessarily love affairs, but certainly a long-lasting collaboration that we've had here. It is always such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Like Effect Astronomy contributor Jean Creighton's day job is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium. It's located on the campus of the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee.